Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
Welcome to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Tumalo. And today we're going to talk about a topic that we haven't covered yet in our podcast. And I think it's a bit of an elusive thing, this concept of leadership and leadership development and what is a great leader look like. And to me, it's like a great leader is like a charitable lead trust. A lot of people talk about them, but very few.
It's kind of like you know it if you see it, right?
But very few have seen them. And so I am delighted here in the studio in person, Jay Browning. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you, Joe.
We go back a number of years.
Oh, yeah. At least six.
Yeah. You were in Maryland?
I was at Cabrini. Was it?
Even before Cabrini.
So Maryland. College. Yeah, I was at Maryland before.
Yeah, in the Cabrini. University of Maryland system?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you've been around. You've been a fundraiser of all kinds. And you're currently serving as the Vice President of Advancement at one of my alma maters, Montgomery County Community College.
Yeah.
Here in Bluebell, Pennsylvania, which is very cool. And lots of ideas and opportunities there.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's my first stint at a community college and it's amazing.
Great. In a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah. Lots of untapped potential, no doubt.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk about leadership today, right? So it just seems like, you know, there's a ton of books on it and I see managers. First of all, how would you define the difference between a leader and a manager?
Yeah, great question. One that's, you know, years ago when we were first studying this, it was pretty much management, right? Everybody studied management. There's still degrees around in management. A lot more leadership now than there ever used to be. And the definition, you know, everybody and their brother's got a definition for this. And I would say that management is basically managing or against a timeline and using resources, right? Mm-hmm. Where leadership is inspiring people. That's the difference that I use.
Okay.
There's lots of them. And you could Google it and you'd see thousands of them.
Yeah. And you're a John Maxwell guy.
Yeah. I have been reading a lot of John's materials over the years. Since my time in the military, I've always been fascinated with leadership. You know, in history, how do these great leaders do these amazing things? Mostly in the military in my earlier careers was why I got started. But then I started reading, just, you know, stumbling across what, like you said, there's a lot of books out there on this. And I would just start picking them up and read them and listen to podcasts or audios of things. And then I had an opportunity a few years ago to go to John Maxwell's training and become a certified coach, speaker, and trainer of his material. And it's phenomenal. It's life-changing for me.
Really? Yeah. In what way? When you say life change.
I think it opened up a lot of opportunity for me to delve into this topic a lot more and yet also have an impact. You know, when I talk to people about leadership, especially in our industry, you don't have a lot of discussions around leadership, right? Because it's all results. It's so focused on results. Nothing wrong with that. We should be.
Of course.
But, you know, there's a lot of issues out there around, you know, keeping people, maintaining staff and things like that, that when you see the results of some of these studies that are going on, whether it's the Gallup poll that says that, you know, 75% of people are going to leave their or have left their company because of their boss, or, you know, we just had this big write-up in the Chronicle of Philanthropy about, you know, 50-some percent, 52% of development officers are going to leave their job in it by 2021. That's always been something of interest to me. It's like, why? Why are people leaving? And I've worked at now six institutions, and I've seen different examples of leadership, good, bad, and ugly. And it's always been fascinating to me about why this phenomena is occurring. And there's not one specific area, but I will tell you, based upon my research, my experience, that this whole John Maxwell material, the reason why John talks about leadership so much is that first he talks about the fact that if you're going to be a good leader, you've got to lead yourself first, right? It's about knowing who you are. What are the triggers that activate your bad behavior or go off on a tangent or set up some emotional issue, you know, responses. So if you know yourself and you can start to work on yourself, which is a constant project, you can then transfer that knowledge to people you're working with. So that really hit a chord with me. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, you know, this idea that we know we've got to have emotional intelligence and we've got to, you know, think about what are the reasons and things that we do as individuals when we're trying to affect the behaviors of others. A lot of it centers around that idea of knowing who you are. So as I've been digging into this around the John Maxwell material, I've just found that it kind of hooks with the development people. I had an opportunity a few years ago to test this, right? To do some training around a team of development folks, a number of them, over a period of several weeks, like maybe, 8-10 weeks. We did a mastermind group or a master's class in leadership. We took one of John's books. We had a long discussion about each of the chapters, starting with chapter one, right? Where John talks about in his most notable book is the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And in that book, chapter one says, basically, it's called the law of the lid. It says all of us have a lid on our capabilities. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about that lid is that we can lift that lid by improving our experiences and our knowledge about leadership. So we always have an opportunity to improve. So once again, it goes back to training and back to experience. And I started trying to connect this with what I've experienced in six institutions, right? When you look at some of the research about why people leave their jobs, you know, they get very specific. Well, you know, it was the communication with their boss. It was, not managing expectations very well. It was one of the things I saw was the climate and the culture was not real good. Well, in my view, that's all leadership. You know, a leader affects culture, right? They set the culture, they can affect it. Communication with your boss is a simple thing. So when I started looking at this and I could see the correlation between leadership or the lack of leadership in some instances, and how we could improve this. So I don't think this is a panacea. We're not gonna fix this issue of so many people wanting to leave their job because of so many different issues. But I think this is an important one and one that I talk about all the time. And I've been fortunate enough to do a lot of training and do a lot of speaking on this subject. And I'm passionate about it.
Tell me if this is getting off track.
Yeah.
Being plan giving, gift planning development, yeah. Yes. Right? Always have my plan giving hat.
Sure.
It's just an observation. It seems like directors of gift planning, of plan giving, stay around the longest.
Yeah.
I have a theory.
Okay.
I guess maybe because it's so specialized, if you're really good, there's not a lot of people doing it, right? So it's hard. I mean, I know a number of organizations that have been looking for a director of gift planning for a while.
It's hard to miss the opportunities that are out there for gift planning people.
Right. So I would think the retention rate is a lot higher for specialists.
Mm-hmm. Corps and foundations and gift planning. And I will tell you, I have a theory, I haven't really done any research on this. It's just been observations. Most leaders in senior positions in development don't understand gift planning. Right?
Right.
So they leave them alone. They just let them do their job.
I was going to let you say that.
I'll say it. I'm a vice president. And I know gift planning. It's part of the reason why I've been successful in my career is because I've been able to get my arms wrapped around gift planning to an extent. But I do believe that a lot of leaders just don't understand it. They trust the people who have had experience in it.
Yes.
And they believe in what they're doing. And so why mess with them? I've got other problems over here. I'm not going to mess with the gift planning people.
Even if they're sitting at their desk reading the newspaper in the morning.
And they're producing, right? As any good one that's been around for a while has deep relationships with people.
True.
And they're producing
because
they know how to treat people. They know when to ask. And people basically start to trust these folks and things happen. I saw that in a number of my experiences. It's happened to me more than once. So gift planning is an anomaly in that regard, right? Yeah, yeah. Most of them are the generalists or the development officer that are in units or just, you know, a general gift officer.
Major gift officer.
Yeah.
The pressure, how much is it the, they're under pressure to raise a ton of money.
Yep.
It's hard work, as you know.
It sure is.
And they're not making buku bucks to do it. And so had, and then everybody's, we talked earlier before we started the podcast, the reality is we're all busy and it's not going to get better. It's just the world is getting faster and busier. And just seeing it, I do some interim work where I get to hang out, and be there on site. And it's just, these are incredibly hardworking people working long hours, under pressure to raise a ton of money, and everybody's so busy. It's like, I don't have time to be a great leader because I'm so busy with so much work.
And I would say to you that that is the niche that I try to get myself into, because I think, as I, when I gave you some notes about what I thought we could talk about, I titled it, and I've done two presentations on this title. Is there enough time and room in a leader's life for leadership?
Well,
that's
said.
Working in advancement.
Good question.
Right? When you're thinking about all the different, and I know now, I sit in the VP seat. I know I have an alumni association board, I have a foundation board, and I have a board of trustees. I have a president I report to. All of those expectations need to be managed, and then I've got a staff that need me to help guide, support, and encourage them. I said those words intentionally.
Same again.
Guide, support, and encourage. Mm. Of course, we've got to hold them accountable, but I choose to use those words first. Mm. With all of those things you're managing and you've got to produce, where's there room for leadership? So who pays? And I'm not saying this is in every institution, Joe.
Sure.
I'm not, because I've worked with some good people who know how to manage this stuff and they're really good at it. And then I've had some opportunities to work with people who are struggling with this. But who pays is the staff, right? Hmm. Produce or get out the door.
Right.
Not having the time to analyze what is the problem. How do we fix this? You were talking earlier about writing a book. I'm in the early stages of an outline for a book, and it's basically, the working title is, are you a coach or an umpire?
Hmm. What does that mean?
Are you calling balls and strikes on your people, or are you coaching them?
Hmm. Nice.
Now, are there a segment of our staff and employees that do this work that really just don't like being held accountable and struggle with this work because it's not the right work for them? Absolutely. But putting that aside, if we look at how we approach the people that work with us, and look at them and say, am I coaching you? Is this a coaching situation? Or am I saying you're doing this work right or you're not?
Mm.
And so I'm starting to develop a whole outline for a book around that.
Great title.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you
very much. So a question about the military. Thank you for your service, of course.
You.
Now, what did it, well, let me back up. I feel like leadership is like this nebulous thing. It's like, what does it mean? It's not, it's abstract maybe.
Yeah.
It feels abstract as opposed to fundraising, gift officer, we understand the donor relationship management or move management process. We work on our scripts of what to say in planned giving. We know the gift vehicles. We talk about how to have the conversation, all those things. And it all seems very tactile and
structured.
And you can kind of, okay, I get it. I can write it on a whiteboard. And then when I show up Monday morning, I can do this, and I can even use a project management system, right, like Smartsheet, to actually track what I'm doing.
Yep.
With leadership, it's like, what is that?
I love, he's my mentor. John Maxwell is my mentor because I've plugged into this program. He's wrote an enormous amount of books around these topics, and I love his definition of what leadership is. It's influence. It's not a title. It's influence. People will follow you because you have a sexy or a powerful title for a while. But eventually, if they don't respect you and they don't feel like they're going anywhere with you, they'll find somebody else to lead them. Maybe even informally. That's the biggest issue with me, is that I've realized over these years of studying this material now that it's not about who you represent with a business card or a title. It's really about how do you react and interact with the people that you work with every day. One of the things I learned from him was, as a new leader stepping into a position, an employee has three questions in their mind. Is this guy, can I trust this guy, this woman?
Mm-hmm.
Is he gonna or she gonna help me? And the third one, of course, just skipped my mind, but it really is around them, right? Because as any change situation occurs, it's always about how does it affect me? So you got a new leader, and I have thought about that too, right? What happens to really good fundraisers? Really good fundraisers over a period of time become leaders, don't they? They get promoted.
Without being trained to be a leader or a manager.
Right.
which is another bucket.
But when I think about, you know, stepping into a new position, and there's an employee. When I stepped into my position a year ago, there were three people in that shop that had been there 5 years or more. They had watched the staff evolve over a period of time.
Evolve or revolve?
Probably both, right? So they're thinking, can I trust this person coming through the door? Are they going to help me? Right?
Or are they going to fire my ass because they wanted to bring their own people in?
Or what is their style, right? Because you get that kind of nebulous question. What's your leadership style? Hoping that they'll get some kind of insight into how you're going to treat them. When in reality, what they want is somebody who's willing to invest in them and say, all right, these are the skills I see. Here's some areas where I think you can work. Let's set upon a plan to help get those better. But we've also got to produce, right? So we're going to keep working on them while we're producing. So I just look at this differently. And I'm I've had several teams that I've worked with in this industry. And one of the things I pride myself on is that I feel like I've been able to connect with them, right? Because I open up a little bit. I allow myself to be a little more vulnerable, right? So they get to know that Jay is not some jackass who wore a uniform and is now still doing those same things when he's not wearing a uniform anymore. That's not true. I'm really there invested in those people. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you can care. That's a John Maxwell quote.
Mm. When you say vulnerability, which I've been watching and studying Brené Brown, if you've, she's a researcher, studied vulnerability.
Yeah.
Great Netflix special, Brené Brown.
I haven't seen that.
It's really good. And she's very funny, entertaining, and very informative. But, right, it's vulnerable. Being willing, vulnerability has got to be huge. Asset for leaders.
Because they start, the people that report to this leader, they start really, they're no different than me. Maybe they've got more experience or maybe they've, but they realize that, and I try this every day to remember that I've sat in those seats. I've been that development officer that reported to a boss. I've had those metrics in front of me and had to figure out how I'm going to accomplish them. And it is a struggle. But if I can be a little vulnerable, maybe they'll be a little vulnerable. You know, I've heard situations recently about people who worked for a boss and they were fearful to tell them when something was going wrong, but they were also fearful that that person, that the boss would hear it from somebody else.
Hmm.
What a dichotomy. How do you manage that? You're in constant fear. Instead of going, you know what? I tell my folks right up front, I know you're gonna make a mistake. You're gonna make a mistake. You're probably gonna make more than one. Tell me what's going on now. And just be honest. That all of us make mistakes. And as long as we can know up front that it's coming or that it's happened recently, we can try to repair it and learn from it.
Yeah.
But that's a mindset. If you're the kind of person that calls strikes and calls balls, then anytime somebody steps off the line, you're going to treat them differently than if we can say, what can we learn from this situation that has occurred? Now, if it's intentional, then it's not a mistake, right? So we got to differentiate between what we're talking about here. But if somebody says, look, I had good intentions, I had a good plan, I did what I thought was right, you know, I looked this all over, and it just didn't turn out the way I thought it was going to. Okay, I don't see that as an opportunity for us to slam somebody, but maybe learn from it. And then we're building confidence in these folks, and I think you get better production out of them.
No doubt, right? So vulnerability is a good trait.
Yep.
You said something earlier. There's a guy, Pastor Andy Stanley.
Stanley, yep.
You know that name?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him speak a couple years ago, and he was talking about clarity. I think that's a big one of his, he may even have a book around that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right around the time, right after Trump was, and I'm not making any political statements at all. This is just the facts. So he said to the audience, right towards the election where he was so popular. And he said, what is Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan? Nobody raised their hand. Nobody knew because it changed so much. What's Donald Trump's?
Mm-hmm.
MAG, right?
Make America great again.
Right. So because he had clarity,
yeah.
Whether you agree with him or not, he has clarity and people followed that. And he said, people will respect integrity, but they follow clarity. People won't respect integrity, but they follow clarity. Right. So I have to think clarity is a big one.
It is. And in our business, Joe, you know this. We metric the hell out of everything. We which is fine. I don't have an issue with metrics in and of themselves, but I have worked in institutions where you could see the people who had trouble with that. Now, my argument would be, to some extent, some of that was that they weren't clear on what they were supposed to be doing. The work that they were doing didn't clearly translate to something we were measuring, right? I saw that as a teachable opportunity. Hmm. But people struggle when they don't know why we're doing something and what they do fits in with the goal, right? I saw that. I think that was even today. I was at a session today where a woman talked about that. It said something like, she's the athletic director at St. Joe's. She was the guest speaker.
My other alma mater.
I don't remember her name, and I'm sorry, but the speech was amazing. And she talked about this clarity around goals and showing people know the goal and know your role was one of their mantras, and it stuck with me. And it's those little simple things like that really help people kind of coagulate around bigger issues. Mm. But that's communication, and that's one of the reasons why people leave their job, is because they're not communicating right. So I think all of us, if we're doing our job as leaders, and if we're influencing people, and I would argue, and I tell all of my staff, even the person that sits out at the front desk, you're leading if you're influencing people. Mm. It doesn't make a difference what title you have. If you're the receptionist and you're leading people and they get a first impression from you and they feel really good about their relationship with this institution because of that first interaction, you're leading. So there is no real need for us to be talking about positions by title. It's really all of us are influencing people.
Nice.
And this idea of the inner circle of people who influence us, right? There's research out there that says we are the sum of the five personalities we interact with the most, right? So be careful around that. And one of the chapters, one of the laws in John's book on 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership is knowing that inner circle and being very conscious of who is allowed to influence you, because that influence influences you and what you do.
Mm. Can you give an example? Can you think of an example?
Well, think about this. If you're trying to make a big decision, mm-hmm. or maybe a medium-sized decision, and you interact with four or five people, and maybe one or two of them in your inner circle does not have good ethics or morals, and starts to sway your thinking about this, when in reality you know you should be thinking in this way, you can be swayed. So you've got to be conscious, and John even goes to the point where you should be auditing who's in your inner circle, who's influencing you. Mm. Not just let it be this happy-go-lucky, I'm going to do it, these are my friends, and I'm not suggesting you get rid of everybody out of your life, but be careful who's influencing you. It's one of the topics we talk about in leadership.
Nice. Good stuff. How did the military shape your concept or your approach to leadership?
Well, I had one view of leadership with nearly 15 years of service, right? So you start to think about a top-down kind of leadership is what the military is basically like, although I would argue that in some respects that's evolving a little. It's still a leader, you have different structures and how the orders are pushed through and all that. But it still came down to how people react to how you communicate, right? John has this great book called Some People... Wait, let me get the title right. I'll think of it in a second. It's about communication. But the point I guess I'm trying to make is not everybody hears what you put out. And that whole idea of what you transmit isn't received necessarily the same way. Even in the military, that happens. Right. Now, I would also argue that there's a very strict structure there that says you either follow the orders or you're in trouble.
You said you have a choice.
Yeah, right. But in those situations where you're not in a combat situation, where you're not at the firing line, but you're still dealing with people in a peacetime setting, which was where most of my service was, you have time to talk to people, right? Unless it's an emergency. Now, I was in law enforcement, so there were many times where there isn't time to explain why we're going to do X, Y, and Z. But it's that leadership that you step outside of that event and go, hey, let's debrief what happened over here and talk about that. If you're the kind of person who cares about people and helping them understand what you were thinking when you made these decisions or when you said certain things, you're helping that person grow. That goes to performance evaluations. That's a big topic right now, right? Mm. A lot of companies are starting to do away with performance evaluations.
Really?
I had a bad experience with performance evaluations in the military. I had a gentleman that was my boss for a month. And the hierarchy in the Marine Corps, I don't know if it's that way in other services quite as much, but sometimes you take tests and that's how you get promoted. In this sense, the higher you go, it's a pyramid, right? So you have less positions and then the qualifications become more difficult. So it got to the point where the performance evaluation process started to be really elevated and kind of really outlandish. So you either had to be an outstanding on every aspect of your job. Like if you got an excellent, you could be kicked out of promotion. That's how tenuous that became. One time I had this gentleman I worked for, and over a month period of evaluations, he marked me as excellent instead of outstanding, and it kicked me out of the promotion zone.
Wow. Jeez.
It damaged my career.
Wow.
So going from excellent to outstanding is such an enormous jump in the evaluation standards of that time. Now, I don't know if the process is still that way, but it was at that time. And then you calculate all this up, and it's a rating that you get. Like an outstanding is 10 points, and an excellent is 8 points, right? So you lose a couple of points there. You start getting, and you're competing with people up this pyramid. And I always swore that I would never allow somebody who worked with me to not know where they stood. I would never broadside somebody at the end of the rating period on something that could have been rectified or brought to my attention when it happened. So that's this whole idea of coaching, right? Because part of what I do is I coach people, right? You say, are you a coach or are you an umpire? So this idea of coaching really is constant communication. Not, we don't talk about how your performance is until the performance evaluation time happens. That's how you lose people. That's another leadership issue. People leave their job because their boss doesn't know how to evaluate them. And that is a pervasive problem, not just in our industry, but I think in industry in general. People struggle with that, right? They have a hard time giving people difficult marks when maybe, you know, something happened. They have a tough time with confrontation and sitting down and coaching somebody through something. There's a whole process through that. So to me, these are the kinds of things that have jumped out. You were asking me about my military experience. And I think that really helped me learn how to be fair when evaluating people.
So that had to have been incredibly...
Oh,
difficult.
Gosh, it was life-changing for me.
But you turned it into positive.
I turned it into positive. Unfortunately, I got hurt, and I had to be discharged anyway, but not then, but some years later. I got promoted. It just took another year. Hmm. It's devastating to a career. So when you start going up the ladder like that, people are getting promoted ahead of you because they got at least a year on you. So what's the impact in our industry, right? You start thinking about what people, when they get evaluated... How does it impact them? How are they learning if we're only going to the end of a performance evaluation period and telling them something that happened 8 months ago that could have been told and fixed, and we could have seen an improvement for the next 8 months and said, oh, that's great now. So are you a coach or an umpire?
It's good. I like that. Yeah. What do you think of these self-performance evaluations?
We're always hard on... I mean, my experience has been we're always harder on ourselves than anybody else will be.
Well, I would always put under weaknesses, I care too much, I work too hard, I work too many hours.
Yeah.
I'm joking, but...
I've seen those, by the way. Maybe not all three of them, but I've seen at least one of them.
I'm too productive, I'm too effective.
Jeez, I gotta slow down a little bit. Maybe I need to get some other people to help me share my experience, you know, something like that. That's funny.
That's good stuff. So, like, real practical stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you show up, you talked about some. You show up Monday morning at the office, and again, everybody's really busy, too much to do. We have to raise a ton of money. Any other like real practical?
I love the idea of management by walking around. I hardly sit at my desk. Mm, mm. And I work in an older individual building that is like, we used to be a house. So I got three floors between my floor and two above me. And I got staff on all three floors. My step meter thing, I'm doing 10,000 steps a day with no problem. Because I'm up and down that steps, and they're out the door, I'm with them. We walk around sometimes outside and just talk to get out of the environment of the office. I think that's a helpful thing. It's not always a check-in meeting at my office. Sometimes it's at their office. Sometimes it's out walking around.
Because your office, you're in It's like you're in control. It could be a power, perceived as a power
thing. Environment, right?
Yeah.
So I think that makes them feel better. I feel like I've worked really hard to create an environment where they'll want to talk to me and they realize that I want them to be successful. That's an important aspect of this, right? It's not show me what you can do. I mean, obviously I want to see production and improvement, but I don't come at them going, well, you got to prove to me that you know how to do this.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole nother discussion for us to have about how do we select people, and I have a really interesting way of doing that. But I will tell you that I tell them right up front, I'm investing in you. I want you to be successful. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure you're successful. So right off the bat, they know I'm in their corner. I never had a boss do that to me.
No.
Never. I've had some great bosses. But I tell them right up front, I care about you. I'm investing in you. I believe in you. And I want you to trust me, and I will build trust with you. I mean, I would have loved to have had that.
Sure.
But I've learned that over 6 institutions and 2 nonprofit jobs after that and studying leadership. And John's all about this. John Maxwell, that's his stuff. Hmm. That's the material he believes and teaches.
How old is he now?
He's in his 70s.
70s?
Yeah.
Been around a while.
Just came out with a brand new book, like, what, a week, 2 weeks ago? I couldn't even find it. I was in Nashville last week. Couldn't find it in the airport. How to Lead When Your Boss Can't or Won't. I haven't read it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Great title.
Amazing stuff. Hmm. Amazing stuff he has produced. So
which one, if people wanted to start with, which book would you...
How to Develop the Leader Within You 2.0. Hmm. It's what he recognized. There's 2 what I would call fundamental training manuals, so to speak, from him that he recommends and I recommend. One of them is the 15 Laws of Growth. It's a green book. Talks about how do you as an individual develop a plan to grow? Because, and it starts out with the law of intentionality, right? It basically says, hey, you can walk around this earth and just pick up stuff here and there. But if you're intentional about learning and growing, you're going to have a plan. Mm. And he talks about how he was taught that. You know, he always thought he was just learning, therefore he was growing, right? But he in those days, he had a salesperson come to him talk about a growth plan. And he struggled and raised enough money and saved enough money and bought this plan. And it really changed his course of his life. Puts it right in the front part of the book. So that's the first one, 15 Laws of Growth, 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, I think I have the title correctly. And the second one is How to Develop the Leader Within You 2.0.
Nice.
Amazing books.
Cool. Good stuff. Mm. Anything else that you'd want to leave with the audience?
Well, I have a side business. I do some teaching on the side. I do some coaching anywhere in the country because I can, you know, we now have technology. I use Zoom a lot. Mm. And I do speaking. So I go to conferences and speak quite regularly. So I'm available if somebody wants to reach out to me, browningadvisors.com.
Terrific. Jay, this has been great.
Thank you, Joe.
Always exceed my expectations.
Great to catch up with you, too.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.